Good evening and welcome to Outsources on KJNU. This is your weekly lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer news and culture radio show. This is your host, Ryan Ayala. Tonight, I am interviewing Dr. Jacob McWilliams, and I met him in his office in the Tivoli Student Union at the Auraria campus. He is the director of the Women and Gender Center, which is housed in CU Denver, one of the three schools on that campus in downtown Denver. We discuss the work being done by the Women and Gender Center, the events that have been put on by them, and what he plans on bringing to the Women and Gender Center since becoming director. In the later half of our show, we discuss his experience working as a transgender male in the Women and Gender Center, as well as what gender-based violence work is being done in collaboration with the Phoenix Center and the Women and Gender Center on the Auraria campus.
This is Ryan Ayala, and I'm here with Dr. Jacob McWilliams, who is the director of the Women and Gender Center here at the University of Colorado Denver. Thank you for sitting with me this morning. I really appreciate it.
You are very welcome. I'm happy to be talking with you today.
Yeah. So we met a couple weeks ago at a trans panel conference on the DU campus. And that was in a retaliation, I want to say, to a transphobic meeting that happened the day prior. Mm-hmm. And so what got you involved with the Women and Gender Center here at CU?
My decision to be here and my work here is actually really linked to my politics, but also to my gender identity. So I was working at CU Boulder as a postdoctoral researcher and instructor out there, and was looking for something that wasn't the faculty. I was looking for something that could have more impact than I felt I was having in that kind of role. So I was looking for a job. I thought running an identity-based center would be sort of perfect for me. And the job came open here at CU Denver, and the job posting said, at that point, it was the coordinator, and I'm a director now, but I was hired as a coordinator, of the Women and Gender Center. But when I went to the website to learn more about the center, the website kept referring to the center as the Women's Resource Center, and the website at that point had not been updated to reflect the change in the name and the mission of this office. So it had been the Women's Resource Center and had been changed to the Women and Gender Center, and they were looking for somebody to move that agenda forward. But the website hadn't been changed, and so the website talked a lot about women-focused programming, building community for women. And I saw that and I thought, well, a couple of things. If that's actually the focus of the center, then they should be hiring a woman. If that really is the focus of the center, that's not what I do. I think that there's important work that needs to be done around building community for women. My focus is on gender diversity and gender inclusive practices. So I was like, I don't know. Okay, I'll just apply to it. And then obviously I ended up getting the job, but in that process, I learned more that the center was really focusing on expanding its reach to thinking about gender inclusivity in general, and I think that's reflected in the fact that I was the one who was chosen to run. I was hired to run this office as a transgender man, and I think that was probably a complicated decision, especially when it was announced that I would be running the center and people didn't know me here yet. So my boss was sending emails saying, please welcome Jacob McWilliams, he'll be running the Women and Gender Center. And she got emails and phone calls from people saying, why did you hire a man to run the Women and Gender Center? So it's been a really interesting process of figuring out how to talk about that with people and what that message is, what the message is when somebody named Jacob is running a gender center.
What is the work that you're trying to do here as somebody who identifies as a transgender male?
I talk about my work. I'm often asked in my role to talk about issues related to transgender and gender nonconforming and non-binary people. But I what I always say is that transphobia is real and it matters and it needs to be addressed. And the only way we can do that is by dealing with misogyny or sexism against women. Because my view is that transphobia is so deeply linked to misogyny that we cannot focus on only on trans people and expect to solve the problem, because the problem is misogyny. So sexism against women or misogyny, that is the center of the work that I do here. And everything I do is aimed at disrupting misogyny, creating alternative narratives about women's experiences and women's needs, creating opportunity for folks to build a community that resists misogyny and by extension transphobia and by extension homophobia, because I think both of those are connected to sexism against women. So a lot of what this office does is focused on things like reproductive rights and women's health concerns.
I see that you have there's a couple events that I noticed online.
So we have three sort of anchor programs that we're working on right now, and two just happened and one is happening in the fall. So the Women's Leadership Conference is an annual event on this campus. It's been going on this was our 22nd year.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's not very widely, I don't know, we're building our profile, but it historically has been focused on women's concerns around leadership and professional and academic contexts. We're moving the conference more toward a more gender inclusive way of thinking about or a more inclusive way of thinking about gender. So our goal is to bring people of all genders to this conference. When you call something the Women's Leadership Conference, you're gonna have people who think that the conference is not for them. And in fact, this year when we had the conference, I was standing out by our sign outside of the conference, and a man and a woman were walking by, and the man, they both looked at the sign, and the woman said, "This is the Women's Leadership Conference. You're not invited," to the man she was walking with. And I was like, "No." And I ran after him. I was like, "You can come." But he was already gone. But what we want is for everybody to be invited to that, into that conversation. So that's one of our events. And that event focuses on people who carry gender identities that have historically been marginalized. So that means women, it means transgender, gender non-conforming and non-binary folks, and it means cisgender men or non-transgender men who express their gender in a way that doesn't line up with how they're expected to perform their gender. So, for example, a lot of gay men or a lot of men who are perceived as effeminate have had lots of negative experiences around gender and have struggled sometimes with developing themselves as leaders in a community because they're not viewed as man enough. Mm. And so we want to have conversations about that too. That's one of our events. We also, in March, had a really cool event called That's What She Said. And that was an event that was organized by Jamie Newton, who's one of my student employees here. He's a graduate student here. And her goal was to create an event that amplified the voices and experiences of women around things like gender-based harassment, discrimination, and an effort to make those stories more visible. We collected women's stories, and we collected over 100 stories from women, and then curated them for an evening reading, and the readings were done by men. So it was men standing on stage reading stories about menstruation and sexual assault and discrimination and harassment, and many other things as well. That event was a fundraiser for a scholarship that we've established called the Women of Auraria Scholarship. And that scholarship is intended to support folks on this campus who are doing social justice or gender equity work and are not currently getting compensated for that work. So this is a way to recognize those people and to give them a little bit of financial support as they're working through their academic careers. And then our third event is a plan for the fall, and it's called You Are Welcome Here. And it's an event focusing on inclusive interfaith practices. So we've been, and that's an event that's being organized primarily by Jazz Fitzgerald, who's a student on this campus, and I'm supporting her in that. And we're focusing on the intersections of faith and queerness for this first event. And we're hoping to also make that an annual event. This is our first one. So thinking about how faith, gender, and sexual orientation intersect, and so the event is trying to create a space to talk about how to resist, build a community that resists things like sexism, homophobia, transphobia, which are historically been part of many faith communities. So that event is intended to disrupt that narrative and put a new narrative in place. So those are our three big signature events in this center. Yeah.
And then just offering support to just all individuals on campus dealing with sexist, transphobic, the isms of the world their intersection with gender. And
yeah, we do a range of other kinds of support services. We am working with a group of students right now on building more family-friendly policies on this campus. And that includes things like pregnancy and parenting and lactation support.
I saw that on the website, there's lactation rooms and a list of them.
Yeah, and there aren't enough of them yet. And they're not easy to access yet, but they will be soon, hopefully. And related to that, there are some students on this campus and our other campus at the Anschutz Medical Campus. They are nursing parents, and they've experienced, I don't know if it's fair to call it discrimination. I think it's discrimination. I don't know where the university would fall, but they have been told overtly and covertly not to nurse their children in public. And lactation spaces are awesome for many parents. And they're really important and really valuable. And they're used as a way to get nursing parents out of our eyesight. So they're sent off to these rooms. And for some nursing parents, they don't want to have to go into a separate room. They want to stay in their job. They want to stay in the classroom. And they want to pump or nurse when they need to, but they don't want to have to go off to a separate room. So these student activists that I'm working with are interested in thinking about how to move this campus toward a more inclusive policies on pregnancy, parenting, and nursing and lactation. So we're working on that kind of thing right now. And it's an interesting issue because our culture is very squeamish about lactation, which has historically been called breastfeeding or nursing, because it involves a breast. And we have, in our culture, decided to sexualize and fetishize women's bodies, including their breasts. And so when a woman is breastfeeding, when a person is breastfeeding and there is a breast that's visible, we get super uncomfortable as a culture. But there's no reason behind that except that we've decided that that's something that should be kept private. And some people believe, and I'm one of them, that we need to normalize breastfeeding or nursing and make it possible for people to do that in public if they want to. So we're working on that. We also provide sexual health and wellness supplies, menstruation supplies, for free to students, faculty, and staff on this campus. And you can't see this in your radio broadcast, but
there are lots of condoms and bags.
Lots of dental condoms dams. And bags, dental dams. We offer pregnancy tests for free.
Oh, wow.
We're offering emergency contraception to folks for free. We've run out, and it's a fairly expensive resource. We receive many requests for it. So we're working on figuring out a sustainable way to make that available to folks on this campus in the long term.
Formed in the light of the throne in the
Good evening and welcome to Outsources on KJNU. This is your weekly lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer news and culture radio show. This is your host, Ryan Ayala. Tonight I'm interviewing Dr. Jacob McWilliams, who is the director of the Women and Gender Center on the Auraria campus, which houses CU Denver, Metro State, and Community College of Denver. In the second half of our show, we discuss his experience being a transgender male, running the Women and Gender Center, and gender-based violence.
What was your experience when you first started the job? What, coming onto campus, coming into the Women's Resource Center, which it sounds like what it was initially called, do you know how many years it was called the Women's Resource Center?
It was started in 2012, and the name as the Women's Resource Center. And then I think the name change happened in 2016. So for 4 years, it was the Women's Resource Center. And when I first started here, I had some really funny interactions where I would say, I'm Jacob, and people would go, oh, because they knew my name, and then they saw me, and they realized. That was interesting. It's partly like, I realize you're not really a man. Mm. Sometimes, I think it's a little bit that, and that's linked to transphobia.
Right.
But it's also like, oh, I realize that you are transgender, and I understand best, people would sort of understand better why somebody with my name and pronouns would be in this role, because I have this stake in it that makes a lot of sense to people.
I'm wondering if we can kind of break down a little bit of the statement you just made, the, oh, you're not really a male, versus, oh, you're transgender. What, in your just experience, what is that? Are both of those transphobic? Is one less transphobic? What is that like? How do you kind of think about that?
Interesting. I think about this a lot, this stuff a lot. This story is connected to that, but I was thinking about this, but it's a little bit separate. Over the weekend, I was hanging out with some friends, and I was talking to one of my friends who's a cisgender woman about feminist leadership models or something related to feminist pedagogy or something, I can't remember. And I explained it to her. I said, so feminist leadership is a consensus model. I don't remember exactly what I said, but I was explaining it. And she looked at me and she said, did you just mansplain feminism to me? And she laughed really loudly. And I've been thinking about all of the different ways I can interpret that interaction. Partly, as a man, I am subject to criticisms, which fair criticisms about mansplaining. And it's fair and appropriate for people to call me out for mansplaining. But mansplaining isn't funny. It's annoying and it's sexist. And the fact that it was so funny to her that she called me out for mansplaining is about, like, humor is about dissonance, right? There's a tension there. And she's accusing me of mansplaining. That's funny to her. Is that because it's funny because there's a tension between how she sees me and mansplaining? Is it because it's funny that I'm now going to be accused of mansplaining? Would it be funny if somebody accused me of mansplaining and didn't perceive me as somebody who was assigned female at birth? Mm. I don't think so. So if my voice was lower, if I looked more masculine, and somebody accused me of mansplaining who didn't know me or didn't know my past, that wouldn't be funny. That would be an accusation of sexism, and it's right. Not funny. And the same thing is true when people say, oh, you're Jacob. It's a way of saying, oh, I assumed, when I heard your name, I assumed that you were a man, with all of the assumptions that go into that. So when we say, I assume you're a man, we're not saying I assume that you are a man who was socialized female. We're saying I assumed you were a man who was designated male at birth, grew up as a boy and then a man, and is now a cisgender man. Mm-hmm. So that realization, I think, partly is about realizing your assumptions were incorrect. For me, anyway, that I'm not a cisgender man.
If you can just talk briefly about just the experience of domestic violence, intimate partner violence, in the transgender community, mm-hmm. in just in general, mm-hmm. even.
The first thing is that the Women and Gender Center is physically located across the hall from the Phoenix Center at Auraria, whose focus is on addressing issues related to interpersonal violence and sexual assault. And that is, it's awesome. It's really awesome to be working so close to the Phoenix Center. But there's also this thing that happens in higher education where you have to prove that your office is relevant and is doing something that other offices aren't to keep your funding. And I think that on this campus, there's some weird lines that are drawn around what different offices are allowed to do or expected to do, and it's partly linked to that. So my office works in support of the Phoenix Center's programming, and we've been asked to support them in thinking about more gender inclusive language and practices to make sure that they're inviting folks of all genders into their office and that folks of all genders feel welcome and supported, which is great. So in that sense, we work in sort of a supporting role. But IPV is everybody's problem, in my view. It's the concern and challenge of every office that does anything related to identity. So my office has to be involved in that. Other offices do as well. And I think it's really complicated because the experiences of transgender and gender nonconforming folks around domestic violence and interpersonal violence, those experiences are different than in some ways, and similar in other ways, to the dominant narrative that we have about what interpersonal violence looks like. And the dominant narrative is a woman being abused by a man. We know that there are lots of other experiences of interpersonal violence, but those are largely invisible, I think, in how we talk about domestic violence and interpersonal violence as a culture, as a society. I believe there's so much transphobia inside of communities that are working to end domestic violence and interpersonal violence. And you see that in narratives about who's allowed to share space in a shelter for people who've experienced violence. It's not uncommon for women's shelters to not allow transgender women into the shelter, but to allow transgender men, because of what I said before, that transgender men are not a threat, but transgender women are. And a lot of that fear is linked to genitals and not to gender identity. And in some ways, I think this issue is related to or connected to another language debate that those of us who work in social justice are thinking about, which is the Black Lives Matter / All Lives Matter debate. So there's a reason that we say Black Lives Matter, and it's not because all lives don't matter, but it's because the lives of people of color, and specifically in America, in this movement that we're talking about, people who are Black or perceived as Black, their lives have been undervalued by our culture and have been treated as disposable and dismissible, and their experiences treated as dismissible. So we say Black Lives Matter, not because all lives don't matter, but because we need to center the lives of Black people right now in our culture.
I want to end on a light note.
Yeah.
How do you see male-identified individuals, cisgender, transgender, just any male-identified individual coming into the field of feminist theory, women resource centers, women and gender centers, the domestic violence field, the gender partner violence field? What are some things that, you know, you feel are ways that the individuals can enter into this and be welcomed and not come in and mansplain, or, you know.
I give this advice for people who want to be better advocates for trans folks, but I think it applies across the board. Okay, so feminism is for everybody, but its intention is to dismantle misogyny. So in that sense, it's for everybody, but it's to support a specific cause. So misogyny impacts all of us. It impacts women more. It impacts women more directly than it impacts people who don't identify as women. So if you're somebody who doesn't identify as a woman, you absolutely belong in feminism. But to be an ally to any cause, you need to be familiar with the experiences of the people for whom you are working. So if you are not a woman and you're a feminist, you are here in service of women's concerns. And that means you need to learn about women's experiences. And it's easy to do that because women are everywhere. But if you don't want to put the extra burden on women to explain their experiences, there are so many resources that you can access that don't involve asking a woman to explain her experience. You can read feminist blog, and I recommend Julia Serrano, Whipping Girl, for a really good analysis, both of misogyny and transphobia.
Whipping Girl?
Whipping Girl, yeah. And I think it's also helpful to read things that explain what mansplaining is, so you know what it is when you do it, and you can stop yourself then, because you understand what mansplaining is. Someone told you what it is, so now you're doing it. Just stop. So I think there's a lot of reading and work that needs to be done, and that work can be done outside of feminist circles. So you can do that on your own. You don't have to bring that to women, and that's a way of not putting extra burden on women to fight. To help you with fighting misogyny. So I think that's something we all need to do as we're thinking about being part of this broader movement. Yeah.
What is your definition of feminism in your life?
I can't say what feminism is separate from anti-racism, separate from disability activism or disability rights, thin privilege. There's like so many different pieces of social justice. And feminism is about centering all of those needs for me. So I don't know what I sometimes talk about figuring out what my first emergency is. And I think everybody needs to figure out what their first emergency is. And I used to talk about that when I was teaching people who are going to become teachers, that they needed to figure out what their first emergency is. And that means, what is the thing that you are willing to stand up for, even if it might put you at risk of getting fired? That's your first emergency. For me and my position right now, my first emergency is misogyny. But it doesn't mean that that's the number one issue that we need to fight today. I think misogyny and sexism are inside of other kinds of injustice, other forms of injustice, including racial injustice, including documentation status. So it's inside of all of these different issues. And my job here is to make sure that people are thinking about that too, as they're doing the work that they're doing. Maybe that's my definition of feminism, that making sure people think about gender too. I don't know.
I think that's a beautiful definition.
It wasn't any words, but it's hard to define.
I want to thank you so much for taking time with me this morning and Outsources and talking about the Women in a Gender Center here at CU Denver. And yeah, thank you so much.
You are very welcome. You are very welcome.
Thank you to Dr. Jacob McWilliams for coming on Outsources and allowing me to interview him in his office. If you want to find out more information about the Women in Gender Center, you can visit ucdenver.edu and search for the Women and Gender Center. That's all the time we have for tonight. Have a good evening.